My name is Jim Shaw. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Pharmacy Administration at the University of Illinois Chicago. My background, my training is in health services research, particularly in health economics and statistics. I also possess a clinical degree in pharmacy. This work, today I'm going to discuss with you the results of a study that we conducted a little over a year ago, specifically focusing on the development and evaluation of a model that was that we developed to explain the associations among dietary supplement use, engagement in other health-promoting behaviors, and cardiovascular disease risk, particularly in the context of cardiovascular disease. Again, as we've been requested to do so, no financial disclosures. This was an unfunded study, particularly conducted as part of one of my students, one of my students' master's thesis research. So, in developed countries, we've watched chronic diseases overtake infectious diseases as the leading causes of death in the last number of years. Similarly, we've also seen dietary supplements grow in their use, particularly not just for preventing, for maintaining health, but also for preventing illness. A number of dietary supplements have been marketed and used for cardioprotective purposes. Most notably, studies have supported the use of garlic, niacin, coenzyme Q10, omega-3 fatty acid-containing compounds, and antioxidant vitamins such as vitamin C, vitamin E, for the prevention and development of coronary heart disease. There have also been a number of studies that have looked at the correlates or determinants of dietary supplement use. Factors associated with increased use have been determined to be female gender, increased age, education, non-Hispanic, white, race, ethnicity, physical activity, and normal or below normal body weight. Interestingly, the last two of these, physical activity and body weight, cannot be considered to be exogenous to dietary supplement use. The former is a health behavior or health promoting behavior, and the latter is an outcome of health, of engagement in a health promoting behavior. Relatively few of the studies that have been conducted have actually been conceptually based, that is, have actually been based on a purported model of individual behavior and the outcomes of that behavior. Most of the prospective studies that have been conducted that have been conceptually based have involved small, non-random samples, which limits the generality or generalizability of their findings. So the purpose of this research was to use data from a representative sample of a known population to evaluate a novel model of dietary supplement use as health-promoting behavior and its response, along with other health-promoting behaviors, to cardiovascular disease risk. This slide presents our basic conceptual model that was developed for the study. And again, I want to point out that the model is more specific, perhaps, than is necessary. We elected to focus on cardiovascular disease to make the project manageable. Effectively, if you were looking at dietary supplement use in general, there were a number of issues with the data that prevented us from doing so. So again, to reduce heterogeneity and make the project feasible, we elected to focus solely on cardioprotective supplements. The model purported that cardiovascular disease risk would have positive effects on the use of cardioprotective dietary supplements, as well as engagement in other cardioprotective behaviors, such as attempts at weight loss, smoking cessation, and moderation of alcohol intake. The model also purported that perceptions of the importance of health would have positive impacts both on supplement use as well as engagement in these other cardioprotective behaviors. In the absence of a measure of the perceived importance of health, we believe that this association would show up as a positive correlation between use of supplements and engagement in these other behaviors. The model also purported that cardiovascular disease risk would moderate the associations of perceived importance of health with use of supplements and engagement in these other health-promoting behaviors. Again, in the absence of a measure of perceived importance of health, we envisioned that this moderating effect would show up in terms of the relationship between supplement use and engagement in behaviors, or what's labeled there as null hypothesis 4. So to evaluate this model, data were taken from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, particularly from three waves spanning 1999 to 2004. The NHANES is a national survey conducted every 2 years to assess the nutrition and health status of adults and children living in the United States. Participants comprise a stratified multi-stage probability sample of the U.S. civilian non-institutionalized population. The survey includes four components that collect sociodemographic, physical exam, lab, and other self-reported data. Over the last 10 years, that has included self-reported dietary supplement use. A total of roughly 31,000 individuals participated in the three waves that contributed data to this study. We elected to exclude individuals who were less than 20 years of age, which left us with roughly 15,000 respondents who represented a little over 200 million adult population members. To facilitate the research, we needed to develop a means of classifying, a means of measuring cardiovascular disease risk. We developed a disease risk classification measure based on individually reported chronic conditions or conditions related to cardiovascular disease. Individuals were classified as low risk if they had no self-reported diagnoses of hyperlipidemia, hypertension, diabetes, coronary heart disease, angina, or MI. They were classified as at risk if they had a self-reported diagnosis of one of several risk factors for CHD, but no reported history of CHD. Finally, they were classified as disease if they had a self-reported history of CHD, angina, or myocardial infarction. CDS use was measured as the reported use of any one of the six single ingredient dietary supplements that I had mentioned previously during the 30 days prior to survey. We elected to focus on these six specific supplements based on the evidence supporting their efficacy for treating cardiovascular disease, as well as their high prevalence of use in published studies involving CHD patients. Initially, we had hoped to be able to look at a number of different cardioprotective behaviors. I had listed a number of those on the prior slide, including attempted weight loss, smoking cessation, et cetera. Unfortunately, due to limitations of the data, most of these were not adequately measured in the data to allow us to really look at them. Given that, we elected to focus solely on attempted weight loss, which was measured as the report of any attempt to lose weight or the loss of 10 or more pounds that was intentional during the 12 months prior to survey. So the NHANES is a participants in NHANES comprise a probability sample, so all of the analyses that were conducted took into account the complex sampling design of NHANES, i.e. stratification, clustering, as well as the disproportionate selection probabilities of survey respondents. The probability weights that were used to account for the last of those were recalibrated to allow us to get an estimate of the U.S. population total at the midpoint of the time horizon between 1999 and 2004. In other words, to allow us to pool the data across all 6 years. There were small amounts of missing data for all of the variables used in the research. In order to account for the missing data, they were imputed under the assumption that they were missing at random using multivariate imputation by chained equations. We elected to generate 10 complete, to allow us to account for variability in the imputation process. We generated 10 complete data sets for analysis using the same imputation models. The analyses were then performed separately within each data set, after which we used conventional multiple imputation procedures to combine the results to generate a single set of estimates upon which inferences could be based. Path analysis was used to develop, to basically test the conceptual model that it presented previously, that is the relationships among supplement use, attempted weight loss, and disease risk. The path coefficients were estimated using bivariate probit regression. Null hypotheses 1 and 2 were evaluated by performing a joint test of the estimates for the at-risk and diseased groups relative to the low-risk group in the equations for supplement use and attempted weight loss, respectively. Null hypothesis 3 was evaluated by testing the correlation between the errors in predicting supplement use and attempted weight loss. To evaluate the null hypothesis 4, that is the hypothesis regarding moderation, the sample was first stratified by disease risk. The models were then fitted separately within each stratum. The estimates were for the fitted models were then combined across the strata, allowing us to perform a joint test to evaluate whether the errors in predicting, the correlation between the errors in predicting supplement use and attempted weight loss varied across the three risk strata. Each of the models adjusted for a number of factors that were thought to be correlated with supplement use and engagement in other cardioprotective behaviors. The models adjusted for height, weight, age, gender, race, ethnicity, et cetera, the other variables listed there. For those of you familiar with probit regression, the estimates themselves referred to an unmeasured latent variable to allow us to actually interpret estimates with respect to the binary outcomes. The coefficients were converted to marginal effects, which represented the change in the probability of positive outcome, that is, the probability of either supplement use or attempted weight loss with a change, a unit change in a given independent variable or regressor. So this slide depicts the actual estimated population percent and the average number of survey participants across the 10 imputed data sets within strata formed by the cross-tabulation of disease risk and survey wave. And so what we see here is that there was a significant relationship between, a significant trend in disease risk over time, such that there is an increase, a shift, if you would, toward the diseased category between 1999 to 2002 and 2003 to 2004. Similarly, this slide depicts trends in terms of supplement use as well as attempted weight loss over time as measured by the survey waves. We saw no significant trends, temporal trends, with respect to supplement use. The largest, if we look here, I don't know if you can see this as well. I don't want to block your view. The most prevalently used supplement was vitamin E at about roughly 12% of the population, or at least as an estimate. The least prevalently used supplement, omega-3 fatty acid containing compounds, fish oil. 18% of the population was estimated to have used any one of these six supplements during the 30 days prior to when the survey was administered. We did see a temporal trend in attempted weight loss. Specifically, roughly 38% of the population was estimated to have attempted weight loss during the period represented by 1999 to 2002, compared to 43% in 2003-2004. Finally, this slide presents a simple raw associations of attempted weight loss and risk with supplement use. We see that both supplement use and disease risk are significantly related. That attempted weight loss and disease risk are significantly related to supplement use. 43% of supplement users reported attempted weight loss relative to 38% of supplement non-users. Similarly, we see that almost a little over 9% of supplement users were classified as being in the diseased category or class relative to roughly 6% of supplement non-users. Okay, so this model depicts the estimates for the PATH model, and what we see is that individuals who were at risk relative, individuals who are at risk or in diseased relative to low risk had a roughly 0.5, a 0.05 increase in the probability of attempted weight loss relative to low risk. Similarly, individuals who were at risk or diseased relative to low risk, same thing, roughly an increase of 0.05 in the probability of dietary supplement use relative to low risk. We see that attempted weight loss and dietary supplement use were significantly correlated, albeit the magnitude of the correlation was small. Also want to point out that the marginal effects, the estimates for at-risk and diseased in both cases with respect to both outcomes were not significantly different from one another. This slide presents the results of our tests of the moderating effect of disease risk. And what we saw here is effectively no statistical evidence supporting a moderating effect, although the correlation coefficients, as you can see, did vary qualitatively among the risk strata in the direction that we might have hypothesized, that is, going from 0.04 in the low-risk stratum up to roughly 0.11 in the disease stratum. Other findings were largely consistent with the existing literature in terms of correlates of dietary supplement use. These are in your handout, so for the sake of time, I won't cover those. So most of our hypothesized relationships were affirmed. Our failure to detect a moderating effect of disease risk on the supplement use weight loss association may well have been likely due to inadequate power that could have been a function of the unequal sizes of the risk groups as well as variation induced by sample weighting. We believe that disease risk, based on our results, appears to serve as a warning sign that triggers individuals to engage in health-promoting behaviors. However, there appears to be a threshold effect that once individuals reach a certain degree of risk, they basically become reluctant to increase their behavioral participation due to a perceived lack of benefit. There are limitations of the NHANES data, that most of the data we used were measured by self-report. We did not look at multi-ingredient dietary supplements, largely because there are no indications for use here, so it would have been impossible to ascribe any sort of indication to most multi-ingredient supplements. So any others are listed there in your handouts. So finally, CDS users appear to be more likely to engage in other health behaviors than non-users. Both dietary supplement use and engagement in other health-promoting behaviors appear to increase when health risk is impaired. And our findings provide general support for a conceptual model that was developed to explain both of these types of health-promoting behaviors as a function of disease risk. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors who assisted with this work, Sheng-Cheng Yu and Dr. Stephanie Crawford in the Department of Pharmacy Administration, as well as Vicky Grew, a clinical pharmacist in the Department of Pharmacy Practice. References are listed for you in the remaining slides.
So, does the audience have questions for James Shaw? His expert work. Yes.
Dr. Shaw.
Thank you.
On slide 22, the bottom bullet, you referenced people who have higher cardiac disease risk being more open to sort of behavioral change, and it looked like a hypothesis that you were putting forward here that once CBD actually develops, those same individuals may not be willing to change behavior due to a perceived lack of benefit. What I'm interested in is if you have any more information about why it is that they may be reluctant to increase behavioral participation. Because one of the things that I've seen is that people who are told that they have cardiovascular disease are afraid that they're going to cause themselves to have a heart attack if they change some aspect of their behavior. Do you have any information on that?
Well, again, this is an interpretation of the results, and we're limited based on its secondary data, so we're limited by, you know, in terms of exploring, coming up with an explanation for precisely why we derived the results that we did is somewhat difficult. Again, the threshold here is movement from effectively having some form of, if I go back to the risk slide, So here we're developing individual from individuals who have a number of risk factors to basically having some form of event. I guess the point is that this is a hypothesis, conjecture on our part. There's no, given the available data, there's no way to actually test that further. So,
sure. But just using the NHANES data, that's what you
meant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess the key issue here is the consistency of the findings between the two disparate behaviors, really.
And I have a question. That is, do you have a sense of or an opinion on the perceived lack of benefit? The perceived lack of benefit that people experience that they didn't continue?
There's no, there's no, first of all, I guess there are no indications for the supplement use, right? So all that we have is effectively the reported use of these various single ingredient products. We don't know, in fact, we don't even know precisely why they use them. That's, again, part of the rationale for focusing on things that have pretty clear evidence that they're used largely for cardiovascular disease. We don't have any information on their perceptions regarding, the effectiveness of these or anything further. I believe that in some of the more recent versions, iterations of the NHANES survey, that they're attempting to collect some of those types of data. I want to say at least for some of the supplements that are used more so for depressive symptoms, but I can't, I mean, the data that we worked with, certainly those information weren't available.
Curious.
Yeah.
Thank you. Other questions for Dr. Shaw? Well, thank you, and thank you for your work. That was excellent.
Thank you.